dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. This is John Barber. Good afternoon. It's 1 p.m. here in Las Vegas, John Barber's World. This, as you know, is not my regular 5 p.m. Monday night time slot, but this show, which is so special, will be rerun at that time. The reason I'm doing this live right now is because I wanted a guest that would be extra special on New Year's, and that guest is only available for the next few minutes. I wanted to start the new year with a truly upbeat, positive, unbelievably interesting guest. 2016 is the Chinese New Year of the monkey, but you already know that if you've been watching the debates and what passes for politicians in America today. Our guest, a lawyer, has made monkeys of more than a few in a courtroom, I can assure you. Now, I know right now some of you are stopping to say, hey, John, hold it a minute. How can you say upbeat and positive and lawyer in the same sentence? Unless you're going to tell us about some who have just died. Well, look, it is true, folks, that poor profession has been the most vilified and joked about in history. Many lawyers have even degraded themselves further by becoming congressmen. Yesterday, bless his heart, Barney Frank said, America and the legal system and government is at the stage where he has gained more affection and respect and acceptance as a homosexual than he ever did as a senator. And the biggest applause he says he gets is when he says he's an ex-senator. Now, the best known line about lawyers, you all know, is 400 years old. It comes from King Henry VI, Part 2, one of Shakespeare's lousiest plays, saved by one great quote. A character named Cade is telling all that after the revolution there'll be food and shelter for all, and is interrupted by a butcher named Dick, who says, quote, first thing we do, kill all the lawyers, unquote. However, like one great play or one great movie, when one magnificent great lawyer like my guest comes along, it makes up for all the rest. Even more so if that great attorney is a woman. And what a woman who I predict will one day be the subject of one such movie, more than a lawyer. She is and has been for decades the leading force and voice for women in this country. What Gloria Steinem and Bella Abzug were doing marching for women in the streets in the 70s, my guest was doing more, where it counts, in a courtroom. She is the distaff David, taking on America's Goliaths of greed, government, and abuse. Right now, taking on one of our tainted entertainment Goliaths, Bill Cosby, representing 29 women. It is an honor, and maybe one day we'll be calling her Your Honor before the Supreme Court, an honor to start the new year with this magnificent lady. Gloria, happy new year, and thank you for being here. Gloria Allred.
A very happy new year to you, John, and thank you very much for that very kind introduction, and we all remember you in Southern California. A definite legend here and a real talent. So thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you, love, and I hope one day you let me sit shiva for you if I outlast you. Anyway, Gloria, the first question. I know you may not want to retell this story. Born in Philadelphia, you started out as a teacher, and something happened in your life that transformed you into an attorney. Could you sort of relate that story? Because
there were a lot of somethings. I mean, I grew up in Philadelphia, by the way, in the same way that Bill Cosby did. I went to a graduate of Philadelphia High School for Girls, which is all girls, all academic public high school. Bill Cosby went to the all boys, all academic public high school, which was located a few blocks away. I went on to the University of Pennsylvania. He went on to Temple University. And we both came to L.A. in the 60s, by the way. And we both have won awards from the President of the United States, although mine is still with me, and there's a congressman trying to take his away. So there are a lot of similarities. I never met him, by the way, until our deposition. We were the only ones who have been able to take his deposition so far in October in the case, in the one civil lawsuit which we have filed, or which we are litigating, rather, against him on behalf of Judy Huff, who alleges that she was 15 years old when she became a victim of Mr. Cosby at the Playboy Mansion here in Southern California. Anyway, having said that, at the University of Pennsylvania, in my first year, I met my husband-to-be. I married him as a sophomore, gave birth as a junior, and divorced him as a senior, and was graduated a few years late. Then I went on to become first an assistant buyer at Kimball Brothers Department Store, and then I went into teaching taught in a pretty tough school. In any event, at some point I went also to California. And along the way, when I went to Mexico on a little vacation, I had the very unfortunate experience of being raped at gunpoint by someone with whom I had gone out on a date. At some point along the way, also had abortion that was illegal for a doctor to administer at the time, but it was not illegal for a woman to have one. But of course, that meant that because doctors couldn't perform them, then you know, the person who did was not really fully equipped to provide it, was not really licensed to provide it, and so I almost died. And that is one of the reasons I'm so committed to keeping abortion safe and legal and available, and also is one of my motivations for, wanting to assert women's rights. We are the leading women's rights law firm in the nation, have been, private law firm. We have been for many, many years.
Gloria, when you started as a lawyer, first, I want to say, in the 70s, when I was working with Tom Snyder on the NBC News at 6 o'clock, and then later doing Real People, I used to wait for stories about you because I found you so fascinating. But when I really fell in love with you, it was over this abortion thing. I think the senator's name was a guy named Schmitz.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? Tell us.
Oh, I remember. This is a really incredible story.
Go ahead.
Senator Schmitz, whom was a very right-wing senator, a state senator in California, and who had also been a congressman and someone who had been part of the John Birch Society, extremely right wing. And anyway, I knew him because his wife Mary was on a television show that I would do weekly at KNBC Television called Free for All. And so actually we got to know each other pretty well because after the show each week, we would all go out and get something to drink and eat together. In any event, at some point, this state senator, John Schmitz, decided he was going to have a hearing in order to, take testimony on his proposed amendment to ban abortion in California. So I went down and I testified before his committee. Of course, he had contacted a lot of the television stations to come and cover this hearing because he was very anti-choice. Very mandatory what I call mandatory motherhood for women. So I testified. And then what I did was I brought a chastity belt And I approached the stage where he was sitting at the table, and I presented him, some people say through, but I actually presented to him the chastity belt, and I said, "Senator Schmitz, we're not going back to the days when women were forced to wear these and where, you know, where an abortion was illegal." And I said, you know, you can give this to your wife, Mary, and ask her if that's what she would want to wear. In any event, he got very, very upset because it showed him on television, the 6 o'clock news and so forth, he was shown looking really shocked.
We were applauding you in the studio while this was going on.
He was looking stunned and ridiculous, frankly. And he was very upset that this carefully planned, staged, anti-choice event that he was having was now turned into making him look ludicrous, which he was. In any event, he then, at some point, caused his office to issue a press release, which went around the state, which essentially, you know, chastised everyone who was pro-choice, as I am. But he singled me out.
Yes,
and,
he did.
I think he called me a slick butch lawyeress. Yes. And I was the only one who had standing to sue him, so I did sue him. And I might add, successfully, ultimately had to settle the case. And just before trial, I donated whatever money we received to all the, you know, pro-choice organizations and other groups.
Gloria, that brought you enormous, enormous attention, because at first I thought, well, you open a law firm with your two partners. Now you're a new lawyer. How does a new lawyer like yourself go about ambulance chasing or looking for clients? Did you look for clients? Did they find you? Or for example, if some woman got into some difficulty and wasn't being represented properly, well, would you call someone like that?
We don't do ambulance chasing. That's defamatory. We've never had a shortage of clients. There have been always too few attorneys who are willing to represent women who are victims of rape or child sexual abuse or sexual harassment, as we did. And we still, to this day, we have many more people contacting us than we could probably ever help. I mean, you know, we are now expanding. We're a dozen attorneys. We have an office in New York. We are doing, at this point, cases in 10 different states. We actually, a few months ago, before we resolved some of those cases, we were doing cases in 17 different states. So we're working with attorneys in other states as well. There are no shortage of people who want us. In that case involving Schmitz, we did not have a client. I was the client. I mean, I was the one who did this. And let me just add a footnote to that, and I don't know if you know about this, but talk about irony of ironies. Fast forward some years later, Senator Schmitz, did you know his daughter was, Mary Kay Letourneau, who was herself accused of sexually molesting one of her students.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you remember that name. It was a huge story.
Yes, yes, yes. Now I do.
Yes. And ultimately she was convicted, but then she saw the boyfriend again, let's put it this way, the victim of her molestation again, and became pregnant by him, so she ended up serving a sentence in jail. The reason I mention that is because it's ironic because of his politics. You know, he tried to suggest in a way that he had the perfect American family,
well,
and that those of us who are progressive, that those of us who are progressive don't. The truth is,
well, look at the House American Activities Committee. About five or six of them ended up in prison for crying out loud after they sent, you know, Albert Maltz and Dalton Trumbo and a few others to prison. They ended up joining them. Of all the cases...
Yeah, if I just may, one more footnote two, is that it was revealed years later that actually John Schmitz had a second family. That, in fact, he had caused one of his own students to become pregnant while he was still married to Mary Schmitz.
My goodness.
There it is, an incredible story.
Look, I must tell you, you know, if they sit shiver for you, They'll have stories to tell about you for 20 years. Your casket will never get in the ground. Now, of all the cases that you have been involved in, I mean, Nicole Simpson, that murder case in California where the guy killed his pregnant wife.
Doc Peterson.
Suing, I believe, somebody involved with Princess Diana. I mean, all
yes,
of these.
Dodie Fayed.
Rush Limbaugh. What was the case that surprised or shocked you the most?
You know, none of them really have surprised or shocked me because, you know, they're, if it matters to my client and it's at this setting to my client, then it matters to me. But, you know, I will say, you know, the longest case I ever had was my 23-year battle against the Catholic Church. We think we may have been the first in the nation to ever speak publicly about our case, about a case where we alleged that Rita Mia was our client. And that she was sexually abused by 7 Catholic priests and had a baby by one of them.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
On the day that I filed that lawsuit in the 80s, all 7 priests suddenly disappeared from their parishes.
And this
is in my book, Fight Back and Win, my 30-year fight against injustice and how you can win your own battles. But
wait,
anyway,
you mentioned earlier something about the Playboy Club. I don't know if the name Shannon Tweed means anything to you. Shannon's a guy that married this lead singer from Kiss. Back in the early 90s, she was a co-panelist with me on a game show called The Liars Club. Shannon Tweed was the Playmate of the Year sometime in the 70s. She had a twin sister, and she told me, and I have never told anybody this ever because I thought it was just gossip, but she told me that her twin sister at the Playboy Mansion was Bill Cosby's mistress and had been for a long, long time. And I only mention it now because of what you mentioned, the Playboy Club. You're involved with this Cosby
Playboy
thing.
Playboy Mansion, not the club, yeah.
Yeah, and the guy's name is Gene Simmons. That she eventually married him and made her son legitimate, Christopher, a very nice boy. But in any event, how did you happen to take these cases, I mean 29 cases, and were you at all shocked about the revelations about Cosby when you finally got him into deposition, or had you heard rumblings of what he was doing? Which happened in a rumor mill town like Hollywood?
Well, you know, we're a firm that has represented many women against high-profile celebrities over the years, against the rich, the powerful, the famous, and those who would inflict injustice, particularly against those who nobody had ever heard their name except their family and their friends and maybe their coworkers. So we're used to, you know, hearing quite a bit about what celebrities do in this town. And when women started contacting me in November 2014, you know, at first I thought, well, I don't know that I should get involved because it's too late because of the statute of limitations, the arbitrary time period set by law. Too late to file a civil lawsuit, too late to even have their case criminally prosecuted for most of them. So why would I be doing anything here? But then as more and more women contacted me and wanted help and wanted legal advice and wanted to have a voice and wanted to take the risk of speaking out, I decided, you know what, okay, I am going to help them. So I began to help them speak out. And then more and more and more and more and more and more, and I might add there are many more than 29 women who have contacted me.
Oh,
some have chosen not to speak out publicly, and that's fine. Some have said, I will testify at trial if I'm needed. You can keep me on your list for people who would be willing to testify. I don't want to speak out before that time, but I will speak out then if it could help your client, Judy Huss, or in any other case. And then there's some who just want me to have the information in case it might help. So I have talked to a lot of people. I'm still having people contact me, John. New people.
Yes, Gloria,
tomorrow I have a whole list of calls of people that to call back. New people that I haven't yet spoken to.
Is there one woman, because it seems to me that Cosby is out on $1 million bail, which is petty cash to him. Also,
right.
It would seem to me that since his wife seems to be the one who manages his money, that she must have been well aware and a co-conspiracist in his endeavors. But there seems to be one case that is moving ahead. Is that your case, or is that the government's case?
No, that's our case. Well, there are two cases. I mean, ours, we're the only one so far who were able to take his deposition, and that was in October, and that's in our case.
What was it like sitting across from him, talking to
and
him?
Then there's the criminal case, of course, is moving forward. It's set for a preliminary hearing next Thursday, but it's now been announced that it will be continued, although the new date is not out there yet. There are other cases. There are defamation cases going on. And also, Mr. Cosby has sued some women who have made accusations against him. So there's a lot going on in these cases. I'm sorry, what was your question?
No, it was, you said there were two cases. I thought there was only one case, the one case being...
No, well, I mean, there's a criminal case going on.
Yes, the criminal case.
And there's our civil lawsuit on behalf of Judy Huff.
The civil case on her behalf evidently is not beyond the statute of limitations.
Well, our argument is, and they're not finished trying to get it dismissed, but so far we've been permitted to continue with our case. I mean, they've gone all the way up to the California Supreme Court, and we've been successful so far in staying in court and taking his deposition. They're going to take our client's deposition at the end of January, and then we have others. You know, a lot going on behind the scenes. Then there are other civil lawsuits against him, defamation cases, which I'm not handling.
I see.
And then there's some other cases going on elsewhere in the country. Pardon me?
I don't want you to say anything that you really don't want to say, because actually
don't worry, I won't.
Confidential. What were your impressions of him personally as you sat across him? I must tell you, if he did do everything he did, and I firmly believe it, knowing what Shannon told me years and years ago, fame for Cosby was drug enough. But evidently it's no longer. But his face, it's like the picture of Dorian Gray. It is somehow transformed into something that reflects his soul. So what was it like just sitting across from him, looking at him and talking to him, and did he answer at all?
Well, the answer is I can't say, because this deposition is is the subject of a protective order.
I understand.
Which means that the court does not... permit me to say anything at all about the deposition, so I can't, except that it took place.
Okay, then I won't even.
That it was, I don't remember, 6-7 hours, something like that. And we have last month filed what we call a motion to compel him to sit for a second deposition in our case. We're asking the court to order him to do that based on his refusal to answer certain questions at the first deposition. So on February 2nd, we'll be back in court, and the court will decide whether we get a second deposition of Mr. Cosby or not.
Well, we saw recently a judge back east, you know, they have a lot of private prisons now, and a judge who had sentenced a lot of men to prison, a lot of boys and men to prison, for which he got, I think, $1,000 a head, like herding cattle, was sentenced to 28 years in prison and may serve half of that time. With a man like Cosby, who evidently is a billionaire, one at a time wanted to buy NBC, do you think if he is found guilty in the criminal case, even though he appeals, do you think he will ever do jail time in America?
I have no idea. I don't know, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens in the criminal case. And I can't make a prediction as to how the criminal case will turn out, because one never does know what a jury will do.
Absolutely.
But I will say this. What will be interesting, John, will be if the prosecutor decides that the prosecutor would be assisted by the testimony of other accusers who might allege same or similar acts, as is alleged by Andrea Constant in the criminal case.
Right.
In other words, many of my clients have already indicated that they would be willing to testify if the prosecutor calls them and if their testimony is considered admissible.
What happens, though, if you get a judge, and this has happened many times, especially in child custody cases, where there are a lot of terrific witnesses, but the judge refuses to let them take the stand?
Well, we're going to have to see, but all I can say is I think it will be very powerful testimony if, as and when, the court does permit such testimony by other accusers.
I wonder if they will do the same thing that they did with the O.J. Simpson trial on Court TV and open it up for the nation to see.
I don't know what a Pennsylvania judge will do, and that's who's going to decide this.
Okay.
But I will say that I do think it will be very important because the issue, I mean, a major issue in this case is going to be consent. I mean, Mr. Cosby has already he's already stated in, deposition or prior, yes. interview with the police and so forth, I understand, he's already stated that. He's admitted that he knew Andrea Constant. He's admitted that they were together at his home. He's admitted that there was sexual contact between them. He's admitted giving pills to her, I think, and wine. The real issue is consent. He is saying that she consented. She's saying that she didn't consent, that she was incapacitated by whatever it was, whatever drug he gave her and the wine, and therefore was not in a position to consent and therefore did not consent because she felt almost paralyzed. She was not able to do anything. This is why the testimony of other accusers, John, is going to be so significant. If they testify that they were in a similar position.
This brings up someone even more famous who may have gotten away with a lot more than Bill Cosby seems to have gotten away with until now, thank goodness for you, and a legal system that seems to be functioning in California. It's the statute of limitations has expired in a number of cases. Now let's take the Bill Clinton case where dozens of women came forward. What would happen and what would you do if a new woman came forward and called you and said, Gloria, would you represent me against Bill Clinton? What would you do?
Well, first of all, any such contact would be totally confidential.
Right.
People keep asking me, certain right-wing talk show hosts have asked me, did Juanita Broderick ever contact you? Did whatever, the other names, contact you? Well, I never say who contacts me. I don't care who it is. I always protect the confidentiality, the names of anyone who contacts me, and any advice I give. And I will never say who contacts me. I won't, that's just not what I do. I protect everybody's confidentiality. I can't tell you what I would do if someone else did contact me along the lines of the names you just offered. I'm a registered Democrat, but I've criticized both Republicans and Democrats. Everybody knows that. I've criticized Anthony Weiner and others.
Oh, do you, as a progressive, could I ask you a very quick question?
Yes.
Do you like Bernie Sanders?
I do like Bernie Sanders, but I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter. I've contributed to her campaign. I think she will be a fantastic president of the United States.
Okay.
I was an elected delegate supporting Hillary 8 years ago at the national convention, elected from my congressional district, and I'm a big supporter of Hillary.
Okay. This is going to be an uncomfortable question because she did something that bothered me. When we went in and I felt illegally murdered Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, quite savagely, and she was interviewed on television. It was a very unpleasant moment when she said, we came, we saw, he died, and then she cackled. And I thought, my God, if Bernie Sanders played that every night, wherever he spoke, she would not get a vote. Your reaction to what she said?
Well, I haven't seen that, so I'm not saying it didn't happen, I just don't know. I haven't seen it, so I really am not in a position to interpret what she said or how she said it. All I can say is, look, I'm not going to comment on whether that was appropriate or not, and I'm not going to comment on the many, many inappropriate statements that Mr. Trump has made. All I can tell you is there is no candidate that is perfect. I'm not perfect as a human being. No one is. We're not going to like everything that any one candidate that any of us choose to support has said or done or will do or say in the future. She is by far, to me, the best candidate in this race,
okay,
bar none.
I'll tell you, Trump has as much chance of getting into the White House as he has of getting a crew cut. He has absolutely no chance at all. Now,
well, I don't know. Maybe you're a better predictor. I don't make predictions at this point. I think it's early, so we don't know. But, I hope you're right.
He won't get the Republican nomination unless he lies and runs as an independent, which I doubt that he will do. Now, you have been an enormous, enormous inspiration to hundreds of thousands of women and hundreds of thousands of us who love the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and know you're out there fighting for our rights. Tell me a little bit about your family. How do you have children? What they think of their mother?
Well, my daughter actually wrote the foreword to my book, Fight Back and Win, and she wrote about what it was like to grow up with me as her mother, as a feminist mother, and it's actually quite amusing and funny, and I think very sweet of her. And she said, "Mom, if I write your foreword, you have to promise not to change one word. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to write, but whatever it is, it's got to go in just as it is," which was very scary, because you never know what your kids are going to say about you. Anyway, it turned out just great, and I appreciate it. My daughter, Lisa Bloom, is an attorney, and she is also the legal analyst for the Today Show. And she is a best-selling author and, you know, has her own firm. So I'm very proud of her, and I'm very excited that today, Monday, we are going to both be together for my granddaughter's swearing in New York as an attorney in New York. So it's three generations.
Oh, how wonderful is that?
Thank you so much. Three generations of women lawyers.
Oh,
grandma,
my God.
Mother and daughter. Very unusual, I think, in this country. I'm not sure if anyone else is in that category. It's historic, not historic. And I'm so thrilled and proud of my granddaughter, Sarah. Sarah Bloom, and she has worked very, very hard. She spent many, many hours in the library, been very disciplined about studying to be a lawyer, and she's got a great heart, and she is also a feminist. And like any grandma, I'm proud of my granddaughter. I also have a wonderful grandson. He's not a lawyer, but he's studying to be a paralegal. And
what is his name?
He knows I'm hoping that one day he'll go into law.
What's his name?
Sammy.
Oh, how wonderful. Oh, my gosh. What is your book called, and where could we get it? Could we get it on Amazon?
Well, my book is called Fight Back and Win. It was in 2006, but I think it's still available on Amazon. And, you know, it's a little bit about me. It's really a book about, I hope, empowerment, because it's got a lot of life lessons in there that, you know, I represent women, but I've also represented a lot of minorities. You know, I've been fighting for marriage equality and against discrimination against gays and lesbians since the 1970s. And we're the first ones in California to announce that we would challenge the ban on marriage equality way back, and we won the right to marry for our clients, who, because we were the first one, they were the first to be permitted to marry once we won it at the California Supreme Court. They're the first to be permitted to marry in L.A. County. So it's a lot of the battles, including for men. I mean, we've represented men who were sexually harassed by other men, in one case by a woman.
Oh, my goodness. What is the name of the book again?
Fight Back and Win.
And Gloria, if people wanted to learn more about you other than the book, and please repeat the name of the title of the book, do you have a
Fight
site?
Back and Win, and they could also go to my webpage. They should just go to GloriaAllRed.com. That's A-L-L-R-E-D, like all blue, only it's all red. GloriaAllRed.com. Then they click on videos and statements, and they'll see all of the videos and statements of press conferences and everything I've done for many, many years. It's all on my webpage, and that's a good way to contact me as well.
Gloria, I cannot thank you enough for being here, for being in America, for crying out loud.
Well, I thank you, and I'm also blessed to have wonderful partners and associates. I call them the Daring Dozen attorneys now, and here with me and the other attorneys that I work with elsewhere in my New York office and elsewhere. And, you know, we want to stand up for, you know, the individual who would otherwise have no voice and no hope and no power, and to give them a voice and power and hope, and also to help to vindicate their rights, because they deserve it.
Well, we deserve to have you. You have a very, very safe and wonderful trip to New York to see your granddaughter. And thank you again, dear, for being here.
Thank you so much, John. And you have a wonderful new year, and a very, very happy new year to all of your listeners. Keep on listening to John. I know you'll have fun if you do that this year.
Thank you, dear.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back with Well, you heard one of the great lawyers in America. You're going to hear one of the greatest real journalists that I know, Joe Satilli, my friend and my regular here. We'll be right back.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Thank you for that smile upon your face, oh sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
Thank you, thank you. I'd like to thank George Knapp for that wonderful unsolicited review. You can go to Amazon and you can Google The Last Word on the Assassination and read 100 similar rave reviews from people who actually bought the documentary and then were kind enough to go back and review it. But something that you don't have to pay anything to see that's almost equally as interesting, and that's John Barber's Last Word on the Garrison tapes. You go to johnbarbersworld.com. Click on the YouTube icon, click on John Barber's Last Word on the Garrison tapes. It wasn't intended to be a fundraiser, but it turned out to be that because so many people wanted to see what we're planning on doing now, which is part two, the American media and the second assassination of President John F. Kennedy. So thank you all for that. And right now, my favorite person related to news in the world, and that's why I have him here every time I do a show. He is the author and founder of News Vandal. It is by far the most objective, best-written, well-researched newsletter in the entire country. Aside from being a regular here, he does the Chuck O'Chelly Show. He's got another one of his own shows on PBS, I think out of Utah or someplace. Anyway, Joe, welcome. Joe Satilli's his name. Joe, welcome back, and a Happy New Year to you.
Well, Happy New Year to you. It's a happier New Year for us than it is for the royal family of Saudi Arabia, which is one of the most interesting things that's happening. This has been We're like a week into it. The U.S. stock market has had the worst start it's ever had to begin a new year. I think going back to 1918, even blowing away the bad start that happened.
Then you had almost 400 yesterday.
Yeah, and then you had the Chinese stock market where two successive days of 7% losses of the entire index. They put in a special sort of electronic system that was supposed to stop sort of that lemming-like movement that you see in markets where a panic sets in and everybody starts to sell. Well, all the thing did was amplify the panic, and so you had a day of only 29 minutes of trading. And here's the amazing thing, John, as we start 2016, first show of 2016. This is what I want people to think about. Oil. You know, it's fluctuating. It's there's some thought that as the weeks progress, it could actually dip below 30, but it's going to fluctuate somewhere between 30 and 38 here probably over the course of the next couple weeks. This is over the last 18 months, it's dropped from over $100 a barrel to this $30 range. Oh, and wow. In spite of this massive drop in the most crucial resource for the world economy. The world economy is in deflation. Macy's is laying off people and shuttering stores because of lack of demand during the holiday season. You have a massive decline in all the commodities markets. You have a massive decline in U.S. manufacturing production, hitting six-year lows. The reason why the Chinese economy is faltering is because there's a huge real estate bubble in China that emerged over the course of the last 15 to 20 years because American consumers were buying so much plastic junk from China that they were ramping up all of their production. They were projecting growth forever. Well, it hasn't panned out that way, so they have whole apartment blocks, giant skyscrapers that are completely empty all along the coast of China. Huge numbers of people have come in from the interior, given up farming, which they need to feed themselves to try and get in on this go-go economy. Well, that's not happening. Apple has reduced its iPhone 6 and 6S orders by 30% because demand is flagging.
Oh, hi.
All of this is happening. Apple has lost $100 billion, I think, in the last couple of weeks of its value, corporate value. And there was a time at which it was trading over $500, $600, $700 a share. It's below $100. All of this is happening, folks, in spite of cheap oil. And that is the scariest thing of the new year.
How could that be happening in spite of cheap oil? $30 a barrel. I remember when it was $100.
Well, there are odd dynamics here. One is that the recovery, such as it is, hasn't really been an organic recovery. It's been an artificial recovery. And the artificial recovery is threefold. One is that you had TARP. This is one of the great – I love acronyms that come out of Washington, D.C. TARP, the Troubled Assets Relief Program. This is the program they devised at the end of the Bush administration, which was handed off to the Obama administration to deal with the global financial crisis. So what are we going to do? Well, let's throw a tarp over it and maybe nobody will notice. So they threw this multi-billion dollar, some estimates over trillion dollar bailout that artificially pumped liquidity into many of the troubled financial institutions and allowed them to gobble up other failing financial institutions at pennies on the dollar. So they hoarded assets with this money that the taxpayers provided for them. Then came quantitative easing, where the Federal Reserve said, well, you know, to get the economy jump-started, let's literally print money and hand the money to Wall Street. Well, what that's done is given Wall Street all this liquidity. Well, what did they do with the liquidity? They came over to Silicon Valley, and I live here in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, and they started pumping money into unicorns. A unicorn is a company that is pre-IPO, is often pre-revenue, another one of my favorites.
When you say pre-IPO, what does that mean?
That means they have not actually gone onto the stock market to sell shares in their company. So all their money, like Uber is valued at $40 billion, that is based only on fundraising from venture capital.
What is Uber?
Uber is the
That's like a German word. Uber.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing about it, right? Uber alles, Deutschland Uber alles. The springtime for Hitler in Germany. Well, springtime for Uber is destroying the taxi market services and the general sort of carriage services where you have to get a license, and allows individuals who are underemployed all around the country. Uber said, we have all these people who can't get a job. Let's put them to work driving other people who have jobs. And they make a lot of money in the process. But unicorns are these companies that haven't really made anything, haven't gone onto the stock market to sell shares, and they've raised money from venture capitalists. Well, they raised money from venture capitalists because the Fed artificially pumped money into the pockets of venture capitalists, and they had to put the money somewhere. So it's these little circular logics that don't make any sense. The final part of it is that although you have this thing going on with the Bundys and the Bundy militia, and you know we've got to take back public lands because the government is destroying the right of ranchers and all this stuff. Well, this real fact of the matter is not only Obama not devising a plan to take guns, he actually is doing the opposite of taking lands away from people on behalf of the government. Obama has opened up many, many tens of thousands of acres to fracking over the course of his presidency. And that fracking turned into another artificial boom because the government, you folks, the taxpayers, subsidize fracking because it's incredibly cheap to go into public lands and frack. It's incredibly cheap to go into public lands and drill for oil. They go in there, they take their profits, and that has created this oil boom, which the Saudis then said, oh boy, well, we got two things. One, solar and wind power are now competing with hydrocarbons on megawatt hour costs. So it's actually almost – there are some places where the economy of scales is actually changing. You can now beat hydrocarbons, coal or oil, for megawatt hour.
In essence, what you're telling us is that the government is no longer running our country. Our government seems to be some kind of servant
yes.
to Halliburton and Dow Chemical and Goldman Sachs.
Yes, Goldman Sachs is the important one.
And then you keep mentioning the Federal Reserve. Two presidents tried to get rid of the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
Abraham Lincoln, the other being John F. Kennedy. And I believe there is one state in the United States, it may be North Dakota,
yes.
who has its own People's Bank.
Yeah, it might be North Dakota. And here's the fascinating thing about the Federal Reserve. I was on I think Chuck's show, and we were talking about the most powerful people in the world. And I said, well, you know, the president, and then the Saudi oil minister, and the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And then I thought about it. I said, oh well, wait, actually, it's probably the chairman of the Federal Reserve, the oil minister, and then the president, the three most powerful people in that order.
Yeah, because I must say, while I voted for Obama because I felt he was going to end the wars, and of course, within weeks, I changed my mind because I realized from his appointments he wasn't doing that. So I just said to friends of mine, Obama is nothing more than a lawn jockey for Goldman Sachs. So indeed, that is very true. He does not run it. And, you know, Bill Hicks, who was a great, great comedian, he was comparable to Lenny Bruce and George Carlin, except he was an extremely attractive young man, very, very funny. And years ago, he made two observations about the Kennedy assassination, which is very difficult to joke about. Now, this is 25 years ago. And he said the only – because they have this six-floor museum in Dallas, and he said the only thing – true, real about the six-floor museum, and it is true and real, is that there's no Lee Harvey Oswald. And then he said, and for those folks who think that when a president gets elected, he calls in the chiefs of staff and head of the FBI and the CIA for a come-to-Jesus meeting in the Oval Office, he said it doesn't happen like that. He says the president gets a call from the Central Intelligence Agency director and says, come on over here. They call him by his first name. Barack, will you get over here? I want to show you something. And then they show him a movie of the assassination of John Kennedy from a different angle. And I thought, God, that is absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And yeah. he said that 25 years ago. And, you know, right now there seems to be rumors. I don't mean to sidetrack you, but there are rumors going around the internet that the Russians are about to release any day video footage from their satellites over New York City on 911, showing that the planes never hit and where they went and where they landed, all of the rest of it. They threaten that. But the truth is that we've had satellites up there since before the murder of John Kennedy, and it would not surprise me if the CIA had a film file in their vaults looking down on Dealey Plaza.
Well, no, of course not. And this is – well, look, we can go down that rabbit hole because we're still waiting for some real-time, non-edited footage of the plane hitting the Pentagon, because the Pentagon would be the most – I lived in Northern Virginia, and then I lived inside D.C. the second time I lived in that what I call the Whore of Babylon, Washington, D.C. And, you know, I've been by the Pentagon many times, and I could tell you your cell phone does not work when you drive by the Pentagon for a reason. It doesn't work. It's a dead zone. And so that place is – there is no place on the planet with probably more cameras trained around it than the Pentagon. Maybe Fort Knox, but probably Pentagon has more. Where's that footage? So it's not there. I mean, these, I mean, you know, I think the point that you made initially that I would like to come back to is when people invest all of this anger and all of these ideas into the presidency of Barack Obama, he is a technocrat.
That's a perfect word for him.
He's middle management. And and that's why he is so frustrating to so many people who supported him initially. And that's why it's so frustrating to watch the people on the other side get angry with him for seemingly the wrong reasons. Because to invest in him, there was, you know, one major sort of purveyor of tinfoil hat kind of ideas I listened to today, because I'm trying to keep up on the Bundy Ranch stuff as much as I can. And he said that Obama is a Wahhabi Muslim who prays five times a day.
Oh, my God. Hey, could we get quickly back to the economy?
Let's do it. Okay. Well, this is a good segue, because it's all about King Salman in Saudi Arabia. And what's going on in Saudi Arabia, John, right now is absolutely fascinating. And I don't know if you noticed this. I put it on the rundown. It's the Saudis have now said for the first time they are thinking about – we talked about IPOs earlier. They're talking about an IPO, an initial public offering for Saudi Aramco. Aramco is the state-run, the royal family-run oil company that some people have estimated is worth up to $10 trillion.
Oh, my. Why would they need to sell you know, that doesn't make sense. Why would they need to sell stock in that? I remember when Schwarzenegger and a lot of these, Steven Spielberg, these billionaires, for crying out loud, were investing, asking people to buy shares in the Aladdin Hotel in Vegas, for crying out loud. When you're a billionaire, why do you care about selling a share? Just keep your money. And okay, so...
I got an answer for that. I have an answer. I don't have an answer for the Aladdin Hotel. That one I can't figure out, but I can figure out the Saudis.
Give me an answer.
So the last time the Saudis were freaking out was when a major rival in the Middle East with a large oil and gas reserve was about to come out of sanctions. That was Iraq. And what happened in the months prior to Iraq finally coming out of sanctions? Well, a mostly Saudi-led plot called 9/11 happened, and eventually the United States went in and destroyed the Iraqi government and the Iraqi nation. Now you have Iran, which is fast-tracking its compliance. It's about to come out of sanctions, and now the Saudis are freaking out. So what I believe, this is my judgment, is that the reason why the Saudis are talking about privatization of Aramco, and they're also, by the way, privatizing their airports and privatizing other aspects of their economy, is that if U.S. corporate interests buy stock in Saudi Aramco, that will force the United States government to protect their assets militarily.
Oh, my God. Okay, so now this leads me to this question. In the last few months, then there have been a couple of people come out, and I won't mention any names, but they seem to have come out with books and proof to them that the Mossad, on the part of Zionist Israel, was involved with 9/11. If it was truly Saudi Arabia, could this new information be a false flag information thing for those who are following this case to this day?
John, you followed many covert operations in your life, as have I. And the thing that you find difficult is to not know if you're talking about a blind source, a double blind source, a triple blind source. Is this a red herring that's supposed to get you off the trail? I will say this. There has been a tacit, quiet, and recently written about agreement between the Saudis and the Israelis. The Saudis do not make a stink about the Palestinian problem anymore. They stopped that years ago. And so there's a tacit little cooperation because they both fear one nation, and that's Iran, because Iran can take the moral high ground against the Saudis in the world of Islam, because the Saudis, remember, they had this big beheading of 47 people.
Yes,
the previous big beheading was back in 1980 when there was a takeover of the Grand Mosque in Saudi Arabia by people who said that the Saudi family had fallen away from Islam. So they have their own internal problems because they live the high life. The Saudi royal family lives like Western, indulgent, secular people. And the Islamic world knows that. And the Iranian state has been sort of a juxtaposition against that and challenges them on that. And meanwhile, the Iranians are the only major Middle Eastern power to continue to support the Palestinians, which is why the Israelis need to preserve the Iranians as a bad guy, because the Iranians supporting Hamas and Hezbollah means that they can tarnish Hamas and Hezbollah with association with Iran. If Iran has the moral high ground, that's taken away from them.
Oh my goodness gracious. You are so smart. You are so well informed. I learned so much from you. So what I want to learn right now, speaking of becoming indulgent, and it's the new year and I'm wishing you good luck. The Powerball is up to like $500-600 million. If you were to win that, you certainly are not going to buy American stocks. What on earth would you do with your money to invest, whether you had $500 million or if you only had a few thousand? What would you invest in?
Well, if I won the big one, and let's say after taxes you're going to walk away with $400 million, I would buy a cable network, John, and I would put you and everybody else on it, and I would I'd basically invest all that money in a beacon for truth on cable network, on cable news.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What a wonderful idea and a great compliment. But didn't Al Gore try to do that in San Francisco with the outfit?
Oh, Current TV? Yeah, well, that was – you know, the last guy to do this is a guy who, in retrospect, looks way, way better and way, way more prescient, and sadly had his legacy destroyed after a merger with Time Warner and AOL. It was Ted Turner, who was one of the great visionaries and who at one point had reporters in almost every country around the world.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, to emulate a little bit of Ted Turner with a big chunk of cash, I'd be happy to do that.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What a wonderful...
All right, I got another show, John. I'm off to Inside the Headlines. So if people want to get the rundown, email me at info@newsvandal.com. That's info@newsvandal.com. NEWSVANDL.com, and you can get the rundown 5 days a week. And be sure to listen to John Barber. I'm off to go do Inside the Headlines.
Okay,
John.
Thank you again, Joe. Happy New Year. We will see you in a couple of weeks. And folks, thank you so much for listening. This will be rebroadcast Monday afternoon at 5 p.m. Tell your friends to listen to Gloria and Joe. And thank you so much. We'll talk to you again live in a couple of weeks. Bye now.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 sunny.